Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Welcome back. Now it's time in our Mondays. You know what happens. We check out a few classical music compositions with our colleague, Clemency Burton-Hill. She's WQXR's Creative Director for Music and Arts. Her book is called Year of Wonder, Classical Music to Enjoy Day by Day, and it's a collection of compositions, one for each day of the year, with an accompanying anecdote or backstory for every piece. Hi, Clemmy.
Hi, Allison.
So we're going to start with June 10th. It's Wagner. Based on a love triangle.
It
what
is
a combo.
Indeed. I know. Wagner's take on the Tristan and Isolde story. His opera, Tristan and Isolde, was premiered on this day in 1865, and it's sometimes described as the ultimate opera. And it's the sort of thing that opera buffs and those in the know will talk about, things like, oh, Tristan, and the Tristan chord, you know, which is four little notes that are apparently changed the whole course of Western harmony. And I remember the first time I had to go and see it, absolutely secretly dreading it, because I was thinking, oh my goodness, it's 5 hours long. How am I going to sit through an opera for 5 hours? You know, and I just, I really wasn't looking forward to it at all. And I think that Wagner has this kind of, you know, there's this sense of Wagnerian, if you don't know, you know, there's like, maybe there'll be some big, like, ladies singing with like Valkyrie helmets and like something will be, it'll all be too much. And actually, I was so unbelievably blown away by the combination of the drama, which was gripping, and the music, which was sublime, and the story, which of course is, you know, unbelievably sort of captivating. And so I sat on the edge of my seat for almost 5 years, and it passed very quickly indeed. And this is a really beautiful moment called Isolde's Liebestod, the love death. And we're going to hear an instrumental version of it. And it's just really sublime and gorgeous music for a rainy, dreary Monday in New York City.
Gentler Wagner.
It is, you know, and this is a love affair between a Cornish knight and an Irish princess. But in Wagner's hand, it becomes this kind of metaphysical treatise. He described it as, he said, life and death, the whole import and existence of the outer world here hang on nothing but the inner movements of the soul. So it is really looking at this kind of very lush and romantic sort of soulful moment, which is not necessarily what we think of when we think of Wagner. So that was just marking the premiere of Tristan and Isolde, a great turning point in the course of opera.
Let's go to June 11th. We're celebrating a birthday of Richard Strauss.
Yeah, another titanic figure of the 19th and 20th century. He was born on the 11th of June, and he set this poem, which is called Morgen, which means tomorrow, by his contemporary, John Henry Mackay. And he had just turned 30, and it was a part of a group of four songs that he gave to his wife as a wedding present.
Oh.
It's a little bit more original than a new set of dining plates, as wedding presents goes. And actually, it bodes well. The lyrics are really gorgeous. It's, "And tomorrow the sun will shine again, and on the path I will take, it will unite us again, we happy ones, upon the sun-breathing earth." And they remained happily married for the rest of their lives, Pauline and Richard Strauss. She outlived him by just 8 months. He died in 1949. And I just think, oh, that's how to do it. That's how to do a wedding present.
Question from the audience. Okay, so I went down a rabbit hole on Pauline.
You did.
And these words kept coming up, and I wondered what this meant to you, and maybe you don't know, but she kept being described as eccentric and difficult.
Ugh.
In that time period, what does that mean?
I mean, maybe she dared to speak her own mind. She was formidable by all accounts. She was a soprano herself, so she was a great musician herself, and it's interesting because Strauss writes all these fantastic female heroines in his operas, and he really writes women very strong, and you know, they know what they need and they know what they want, and one can't help but speculate that perhaps that was because he was married to someone who was clearly, you know, knew her own mind and dared to speak it. But of course that gets framed in a negative way in the writings of the time. I think she's one of the more interesting of the musical wives that I think is absolutely worthy of our attention and time. So I'm glad you went down a Pauline rabbit hole.
That's your next book, by the way, I think.
Done.
Don't you think?
Just definitely there's something in the musical
wives. There's something
wives.
There, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Alma Mahler. There's quite a few of them that pop up in my book. When I was researching it, I was like, oh, I really want to know more about that lady.
Let's go to June 14th. Bookmark that, by the way.
This one. absolutely will. Thank you so much. This one is... it's actually a really well-known piece of classical music. It's one of those things that crops up on adverts, mm-hmm. and it crops up in sort of, you know, a slightly more mainstream way than a lot of the pieces that we play. It's called The Lark Ascending, and it's by a great English composer called Ralph Vaughan Williams. And he was really fascinated by folk songs and their influence on what he could do sort of in a classical language. And this is an incredible setting that was written in 1914, and it seems to encode for me in its very DNA this nostalgia for a time. You know, think about this being written on the eve of the outbreak of the First World War. It wasn't actually premiered until 1920 because of the war, and it was premiered by a wonderful violinist called Marie Hall on the 14th of June in 1921, and a critic from the Times of London who attended that premiere memorably observed that the piece stood outside of time and it dreamed itself along, which I think is an incredible way of putting it. And he's setting words by the poet George Meredith about the song of a skylark, and incredibly does seem to just encapsulate what that bird is doing.
Two thoughts. One, I wanted to hear that run and to resolve. And then I also thought, and you've seen this on our Instagram, the dog who listens to the classical, one of our listeners.
That is my favorite thing in the actual world right now.
There's one of our listeners, you know who you are, her dog and her cat listen to this segment, and the dog's ears he loves it. So I'm just wondering right now what that puppy's doing. And if you want to check this out, go to All of It WNYC on our Instagram, and you can is that video the best?
Please tell me that puppy is conducting the Dark Ascending with his ears today. That would make me so unbelievably happy.
It's one of the best things I've ever seen. You have a live event. Tell us about it.
We do. WQXR is celebrating Pride Month. We'll be live at the Green Space tomorrow evening with an evening featuring wonderful performers and composers, including the Met Opera star Anthony Roth Costanzo, accompanied by David Moody. We'll have members of the New York City Gay Men's Chorus, Chamber Queer, the pianist Sarah Davis Buchner, cellist Hannah Collins, tenor Scott Murphy, and a conversation with Stephen Blyer, who is a pianist and artistic director of the New York Festival of Song. It's going to be a most wonderful musical jamboree hosted by our very own Tobin Lowe of the WNYC Studios podcast, Nancy, if you're a fan of Tobin, who is a really wonderfully brilliant musician as well. Mm-hmm. You might not know that about Tobin, but he's like a musical geek underneath it all. So it's going to be a really fantastic event. We've got little guest appearances from people like Yannick Nezet-Séguin, who's the artistic director of the Metropolitan Opera. We've got the wonderful mezzo-soprano Jamie Barton, who is one of the most unbelievably pioneering and powerful advocates for queer members of the community, the classical community. So it should be a really fantastic and celebratory evening. We would love to see you there. You can get your tickets on thegreenspace.org or through WQXR.
Clemency Burton-Hill, thank you as always.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Robert McFarlane stops by to discuss his new book, Underland, A Deep Time Journey. This is All of It. Don't go away.